Welcome to the Minimalist Educator Podcast, a podcast about paring down to refocus on the purpose and priorities in our roles with co-hosts and co-authors of the Minimalist Teacher Book, Tammy Musiewski-Borneman and Christine Arnold.
In today's episode, we talk to Michelle about how to handle split roles and supporting staff in their work. Her pared-down pointer is to remember that less is more, especially when it comes to new initiatives. Michelle Jasinska is an assistant principal, PYP coordinator, and teacher at a medium-sized international school in Japan. She's effectively in charge of the elementary school, has three jobs, and has to be hyper-organized amongst the chaos.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Minimalist Educator Podcast. This week, we have a very special guest, Michelle Jasinska, with us. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, thank you for welcoming me to your podcast.
It's awesome to have you with us because, the three of us met teaching in Singapore a few years ago. And so the three of us, you know, have lived in many different places. You and I have that Canadian connection, but you also have that British Isles connection, and you're now in Japan, which is where Christine used to teach. So there's all of these interesting common threads. And during that time, you've also shifted roles too. So the three of us were actually teachers in the same school, and now you're in an administrator role. So can you talk a little bit about your current role and then that shift that you made from teacher to admin?
Yeah, this is something I absolutely never wanted to do. I have to preface this. I always said I just never want to be in leadership. That just is not for me. But here I am. And it seemed like throughout my life, I've always been handed these kind of roles. It's always been, oh, Michelle, here's a group, you can be the leader, or been placed pretty intentionally with people, whether it's in school or in other places where I know I was meant to lead that group. So I think it just was a natural step. I'm currently in a school in Japan. I wouldn't say it's small to medium size. It's kind of a growing school. We have 400 students. I have 200 students under me, but I have also three roles at this school. So I went from a teacher to, and just one class, just responsible for a small area of the school, to responsible for the curriculum coordination. So I'm a PYP coordinator, as well as the assistant principal of the school. And I also teach. So as you can imagine, this is not a very minimalist job.
No. This is
a job that's anything but minimalist because it just has so many facets to it. And I have so many different ways to pull my time in every day. And as you know, as an educator, no day is the same. And it can be chaotic. And even with one role, but with three roles, it seems like this chaos is extra.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Then how do you section up your week? Does it look like, I know, like you mentioned, no day is the same, but do you try to section out your week so that, like, do you teach at 2 days a week and then you have a day of coordinator time? Like, how does that look for you then?
That's a really good question. So the way that this is structured is I have only the units of inquiry for my class. So I share the role with the principal, and we've actually had to pull in someone else to teach the literacy. So principal teaches the maths, someone else teaches literacy, and I teach the unit of inquiry. So I have class every day. I have meeting times every day that I've pre-scheduled with every single team. And I have what I try to block out is admin time. However, I realized really quickly that blocking out admin time doesn't necessarily work because there are things that happen throughout the day that just you cannot plan for. So I just make sure that I have enough time to myself, for one, and I have mm-hmm. enough time to actually function running the school.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires, what it requires is looking ahead and thinking kind of in 6-week chunks. So looking 6 weeks ahead, going, okay, what are all the priorities I have coming up? What's coming up in 6 weeks? Right. These are all my must-dos now. These are my not so urgent, but will need to be done. So I use the decision-making matrix. This has really helped because actually from that, I often, in my earlier days in my admin role, I would take everything on myself. I would just look 6 weeks ahead, but I would just do absolutely every single thing that I needed to do between that point and 6 weeks ahead. But where I have become a bit more minimalist in my approach to leadership is to actually delegate some of those tasks that actually don't necessarily need to be connected to my role, that can be delegated to appropriate people. And I think that this is actually a pitfall of many leaders, is that they do delegate, but they're actually putting a lot more pressure and a lot more stress, a lot more time on their staff that they don't necessarily have. Mm-hmm. So I'm also very mindful about who I give these not so time sensitive, but, you know, pretty urgent tasks to. But I need to make sure that it's in their capacity to do it.
Uh-huh. And so do you do giving them choice or?
It's usually connected to either their role, if they have a kind of a middle leadership role. So I often will do that with my subject area coordinators. So if it's something that's connected to a unit of inquiry, I might give it to that subject area coordinator, or perhaps literacy, or perhaps maths. That's my first point of call. So I have my kind of hierarchy. Who should it go to? The next, it is a choice. There is a who would like to take this on? And we have really great staff and people do take it on, but I also have to be mindful of that it's not the same person taking it on each time.
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of thoughts and I'm like, which direction do I want to go?
You can go any direction.
I want to go back to, you mentioned using the urgent important matrix, which comes from like Stephen Covey, and you see it in a bunch of places, right? And we've got an adaptation in our book. How often do you use that to reprioritize? Because we know that there's certain times of the year that, you know, priorities change. So how often do you use that?
I think I should print it off and look at it every day. But I think because it's in my mind now, I use it every day. I use it absolutely every day because my important, not urgent tasks, I'm scheduling those. I'm putting reminders in my calendar. I'm snoozing emails when I know that they're not important right now and I will need to do them later. Because if I don't, if I just click on the email and go, oh, I'll do that later, I will never remember. When you have this many things going on, your mind can be like a sieve and it could just, everything can just drop right through. So I schedule those. Anything that's urgent, important, obviously gets done right away. And that's usually with any student-centered issues, anything around health and safety, any crises, really. Not urgent, not important. I had a really good think today, and I thought, what comes up that's not urgent and not important? And I feel like I don't think there's many things at school that happen that aren't important. Because even if it's a small issue that a student has, maybe something that's bothering a teacher, that's still important because it's important to them. So yeah. I think I honestly don't even think I look at quadrant four in my day-to-day life.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
I've been using one of those. It's like a Chrome extension. It's similar, but it's like must do later, delegate, postpone. So it's kind of a similar one. But I have to say, everything goes in the must do. It's really good. It's a real problem I have.
It's really hard not to take all of that on. Yeah. And I think I love my school. It's an amazing school. We have amazing students. We have amazing teachers. But we have a syndrome that a lot of smaller schools have where we try to do it all. So in our roles, we try to do it all. We have so many different roles in one because that's just the way small schools tend to go. I feel like my school is a very keen go-getter kind of school, and we try to do it all as well. So we have so many things happening at once. And I think that can be very distracting. Mm-hmm. Because there's just so many things happening at once, it's hard to kind of grab on to what's happening at each moment of time, because everybody wants to do something. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to have their initiative go ahead. Everybody wants to have their voice. And that's wonderful. And we're celebrating that. However, it can be really complex and quite a lot on staff. So a leadership approach to this is really making sure that the system itself is supporting an environment that's not stressful. Mm-hmm. But it's not always easy.
Right. So how do you try to mitigate some of that stress? Because it is fun, right? Like there's a lot of, there's a lot of shiny objects in education, like, ooh, this thing is fun. Let's try this program or contest or like whatever it is, right? But how do you...
And then also because different people have different thresholds of how much they can juggle at the same time. So how do you do that, Michelle?
I don't think I do it very well yet, actually. I think just being a voice of... not reason, but a voice of, is this too much? Are we giving everyone enough time to accomplish what they need to accomplish? Are we giving everyone enough time to wrap their heads around all of these new things that are happening? So for instance, this year we have some strategic committees focusing on our strategic areas of growth. And they're awesome. We have such wonderful engagement in those committees, but they're all wanting to do something really big and really wonderful for the school. And so this is an instance of, is it too much? Should we just focus on one strategic strategy that we want to grow our school in? Or should we focus on maybe two, but not necessarily four at the same time? So I think just being really strategic in how many initiatives are happening at once, how deep can we go rather than how many things can we do? But this is not a criticism at all, because we're actually doing some wonderful things. I just, sometimes I feel like, could we be doing things a bit deeper first and then going to the next thing?
Yeah. I sometimes think, and I think that's just common in schools, right? Where you do want to do all the things because you can imagine the learning growth and the excitement in classrooms. And I think that we don't give enough time to initiatives to actually see if they're doing what we need them to do either, right? So before the first initiative or even the two together have enough time to for us to see the growth or not, we're already shifting to the next thing. Like I remember we used to do this all the time in New York City. It was like every 2 years there was a new pilot, something happening. It was like technology or a new math thing or new ELA program or whatever. But you never had time to see, because it takes like 3 to 5 years to see actual progress and real growth. But 2 years, you're just kind of getting settled into it. And then you're like, boop, that's gone. We tried that out. But it just keeps happening. Why don't we learn that we do need to spend a little bit more time and go deeper with one or two things rather than the five things? And sometimes I think that's like you mentioned, should we focus on two strategic parts of the plan or goals? And that's it. We don't need four, but we always, you know, we want to do better in all the ways. So we make more goals. But again, how do you find the right balance to do that, right?
I think what's really important, and I'm looking at a different model. This is the Lippitt-Noster model for the complex change. And I shared this in the notes. Mm-hmm. And this is something that really resonated with me. During the summer, I went to the Principals Training Center. And this was a model that we unpacked. And we thought about this as in the workplace and in the educational workplace. Mm-hmm. And for those, if you're not looking at the model right now, you need for success, you need vision, consensus, skills, incentives, resource, and an action plan. And if you're missing one of those components, then you have some specific problem. So for instance, if you're missing vision, then there's confusion. If you're missing consensus, there's sabotage. And I think those two are really important with any initiative that you are doing in a school or that you are approaching in a school, is that you have vision and consensus. And I think if people are pulled every which way, it's hard to gain a consensus, and it's hard to share a very common vision or to develop a very common vision. So I think to be successful, if you are choosing to do many, many things, that vision has to be very, very clear and very, very concise and very shared as well. And I think to get full-on buy-in, that's so important, because otherwise you will have confusion and you won't have the support of your whole team.
And Brené Brown always says clear is kind, right? So we have
clear is kind.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We have to be clear in the vision for sure.
It's just reminded me, I just finished reading the book Nudge. I don't know if you've seen that one, but they talk a lot about like opt-in versus opt-out systems, and how actually if you start with like, we're all doing this unless you want to opt out, has more uptake than if you say, hey, is anyone interested? Let me know if you're interested and opt in. Do you think that has any relevance in our context of schools?
Absolutely. I feel like in most of the schools I've been in, opt-in has never really been a problem, because maybe it's just because of the type of staff that we tend to get at different schools. But I think that's a very good model. And I think I'm writing it down, because I'm going to use that moving forward. I'm going to trial it out. Okay. I want to see how that looks. I'll try it out with some initiative or something along the way. Mm-hmm. I don't have much else to say about it, because I have not tried it.
Yeah. No, it just really got me thinking of like, is that possible in a school? I'm not, I haven't seen it. And they weren't talking about our context in the book, obviously. They were talking about other things, but it just got me thinking.
We'll do part two after I've tried it out.
Let's all try it out and see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good point. Yeah, because I don't know if I've been in a school context where it's like, are you opting in or out? You just kind of have to be on board.
Maybe that's the feeling of expectation.
Yeah, could be. But I guess it's just reframing the thinking around it. That's a good brain tickler.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this and, you know, teacher burnout and disengagement. And this is connected to just doing too many things. Recently, I went to a workshop about systems archetypes, and it was phenomenal. And it was something I'd never approached before. But effectively, this systems archetype, you have a symptom. So a symptom is like an issue. So let's say staff burnout. Symptomatic solution is like kind of that Band-Aid solution, that very surface level solution to the problem. Mm-hmm. So for instance, let's say staff barbecue. Oh, you're feeling burnt out? Here's a staff barbecue. Yeah. The side effect of that symptomatic solution is probably, I would say, staff are pretty much more even disengaged than before, resentful. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they feel like they're not being listened to or heard, or their voices matter. And then you still have the symptom. You still have the problem, but you might even have more problems connected around that.
Mm-hmm,
But what the system calls for, though, is a fundamental solution. And what is that fundamental solution? Well, in this case, is it alleviating that burnout by putting less on the plate? Is it something deeper? Is there maybe a confusion about the vision? Are class sizes too big? Is behavior a problem? I don't know. There could be a number of problems that are leading to the staff burnout.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to have the fundamental understanding before you have the fundamental solution.
Yeah. And thinking about it thoroughly rather than just like reacting with,
yeah,
let me bring you all a smack in the morning and that'll help. Fix it. Yeah.
Morning yoga.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, staff barbecues are great, but it doesn't necessarily solve the fundamental or the symptom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly. It's a good feel good, mm-hmm. maybe for some people temporarily, but right. It doesn't resolve any issue at all.
And to keep the minimalist hat on, the fundamental solution is usually taking something away.
Right.
Is it minimalizing something?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we know that one of my friends often mentions, like, teachers don't have plates, they have platters. And there's just so many. It's like, right, it's a smorgasbord of like all the things, yeah. right? So mm-hmm. it just is not, I just don't really remember. Well, I do remember a time when I had that shift in thinking, like, ooh, I have a lot less on my plate now than I used to. And that was the move from New York City to Singapore. And I was like, ooh, this feels a lot better. But I didn't know it was a thing I could feel.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, when you shift places, like you're learning all the new things, you don't have to kind of extend yourself to committees yet or to leadership yet, because mm-hmm. you're just getting to know the new environment. The longer you stay somewhere, that changes. Right. Mm-hmm. Then you do get all of that stuff tacked back on and you're like, damn it, how can I retract?
Especially if you've been out of school for a while and mm-hmm. you are the institutional knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You become part of the institution. And whether you like it or not, that is coupled with more responsibility in one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah. That weighs a lot.
Yeah.
Michelle, you have given us a lot to think about. I am going to check out more about the systems archetype for sure. And we do have to have a part two because we have to find out about your opt-in system, if that is something you were able to work into.
But this is from some of your Nudge.
Yeah. It's two Nudge. Authors. Someone, Taylor, and something else. I'll put it in the show notes. That's we'll terrible. It. I can never remember the authors of things, but yeah, it's called Nudge.
Yeah.
But when we all try it, we'll see how it goes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And then we'll check back in. And at the end of a show, we always ask our guest for a pare down pointer. So could you give us, it could be something from our conversation or just like something that you keep in mind as you work through your day.
Less is more with any initiative in the classroom, as leadership, in any institution. I think you really have to connect with the purpose. What is your purpose for being there? What is your guiding statement? What is your vision? And follow that. Does it serve that? And just really analyze that before you carry on. And I wrote one initiative at a time. That's never possible, I'm sure, but just minimalizing those initiatives and going deeper, being clear, make it achievable, and people will feel like they've accomplished something, because you will have accomplished something.
Thank you so much for your wisdom today, Michelle. It's been great having you on the show.
Yeah,
thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, going back right to the beginning of the show, you were talking about, you know, these leadership positions have always been coming your way, and I can totally see why. You've just got this calm, caring, thoughtful approach to everything you do. So I can absolutely see why that's happened to you. So thank you for joining us and sharing that with us today.
Well, thank you so much.
Today's episode was brought to you by Plan Z Professional Learning Services, forward-thinking educator support. Find out more at planzplservices.com.
Be sure to join Tammy and Christine and guests for more episodes of the Minimalist Educator Podcast. They would love to hear about your journey with minimalism. Connect with them at PlanZPLS on Twitter or Instagram. The music for the podcast has been written and performed by Gaia Moretti.